Good afternoon and welcome back to the Tuesday afternoon program. I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson. In the studio with me, Mr. Rodney Greenblatt.
Hello.
Rodney.
Hello.
Ah, so good to have you back.
Thank you.
A wonderful interview last time.
Thank you.
Thank you for agreeing to come in. How are you?
Hot.
It's a hot, humid day.
Very hot outside.
Very hot and humid day. So since you were last on, you have opened the Rodney Shop.
Yay.
Tell us about it. What's going on?
Well, it's a great place to explore the work of Rodney Allen Greenblatt for many years and to buy all these little things that I've designed over the years that are kind of for kids and people who just like fun stuff. My prices range from $1 to $3,200.
I see. That's a range. That's good.
So there's something, I think, for everyone.
Right.
I'm not sure about that statement, but it's close.
So we should give people a little bit of an idea in case they missed our interview. You're primarily a visual artist.
Yes.
You achieved a lot of recognition in the 1980s in the East Village, part of the East Village art scene.
A certain amount.
A certain amount. Okay. You and your wife, Dina, came up. You bought a house in Ghent. Then you made the full move, right, to come to Catskill. You bought a building downtown on
yes.
Main Street.
Yes.
So you live upstairs from your shop.
That's right.
You have a studio in Leeds, which
That's
you're
right.
still making your artwork in.
Yes.
Correct. So why open a store?
Well, it's kind of been a dream. I have made lots of products. And in New York City, it's impossible. I lived in New York City for many years. And I always thought of a pop-up shop or what can we do, invite people into the loft or whatever, but it just was not doable.
Hmm.
But when I got here and the building, the beautiful building that we are renovating on Main Street here in Catskill, had an empty shop. So I decided to give it a try.
Hmm.
And that's really what it is. It's mm-hmm. an experiment. And it's a lot of fun.
So you've been open about a month?
Yeah, we've been open a month. We're only open on the weekends, yes. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay, so first of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
To 1 month. That's cool.
Thank you.
And what have you learned about yourself as a shopkeeper? How did reality face the dream?
Well, you know, it's actually, it's very quiet on Main Street sometimes.
Yes.
On Sunday afternoon when it's hot. I wouldn't say there's no one on the street, but it's close. But I found that being in the shop gives me an opportunity to do a lot of things that I wouldn't normally take the time to do. Take a look at some emails that maybe I should have answered a little better than I did. Work on my sketchbook. Look at some of the store items. Reassess what we're selling and what mm-hmm. the prices are. So it's kind of been a good experience being in the store and mm-hmm. being kind of nailed down to that one place
mm-hmm.
and not being able to leap up and go and do other things. So it's been a good experience so far.
Dina is sharing shop hours with you, right?
Thank goodness.
Yes.
She is sharing with me.
That's
and
great.
We're just playing it by ear as to who can take the shop.
Uh-huh. So I know most people have some kind of version about, I'd really love to have a bookstore. Oh, I'd really love to have a cafe. And I've walked into Hyla with so many people, and at 394, same thing, people go, oh, this is what I want to do. This is so cool.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure you're getting that from your store. But I'm curious about, even in a month, how does the reality measure up to the dream of doing something? You fantasized having a store with your products that you've made.
Yeah.
Now you're doing it.
Right. Well, it's exciting and humbling at the same time.
Mm.
People come in and they don't buy anything.
Mm-hmm.
How does that make you feel?
Well, do you ever get the feeling that they don't get it?
I don't know. I mean, it is very new and no one has seen a lot of the stuff that I have. Mm-hmm. It is puzzling. I understand that. So it's just going to take me some time to be able to express to someone who walks in completely cold and doesn't know my work. It's going to mm-hmm. take me a little time to figure out how to really express that to people.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I'm just playing it by ear, learning as I go. And I think that's really all I can do.
Did you, prior to opening the shop, say to yourself, this is what I'd really like out of this? And out mm-hmm. of that came some kind of a list of two or three things that were probably the priorities. And if so, what were they if you had that list?
Wow. Well, I guess, you know, being a fine artist, I've been involved in the gallery system all these years. And that is a very specific marketing way that has to do with very wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
Or people who are at least wealthy enough to buy multi-thousand dollar artworks at the beginning, at the, you know, at the base level.
Mm-hmm.
I've really wanted to break through that somehow. I've always been interested in breaking through that. That's why I did children's books. That's why I did a lot of illustration work. That's why I became a product designer. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to connect with more people.
So the three things you just mentioned are entirely different in their creative process in some ways. Mm. Did you find a hurdle in sort of branching those parts of yourself and sort of weaving them together? I mean, being in the studio, to me,
yes.
has a lot of, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yes.
I don't know where this painting is going.
Yes.
I'm a fraud.
Yes.
Why am I here? Uh-huh. And then you break through and you make something, you think, oh, that could be pretty good
yes.
after all of that. But designing a product for a specific audience,
yes.
that's an entirely different emotional as well as aesthetic experience, isn't it? Or is it not?
Yeah. No, it was. Yeah. In fact, it's yeah. a collaboration.
Okay.
You don't make products like the products I designed on your own. They were made by teams of people.
And did you enjoy that part of it?
I did enjoy that.
Yeah. You found you were good at it.
I don't know if I was good at it, but I was able to do it. Mm-hmm. And it was fine. It was fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did that for 10 years, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that exactly right now. But I am running the retail store, mm-hmm. so it's another experiment.
Do you want to return to that? Do you have any desire to think about a future of designing collaborative products?
Not particularly. But if I suppose if the right mm-hmm. situation appeared, I might look into it. But mm-hmm. I really did it.
yeah.
I really worked at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and you went to Japan, and you worked
Many
with some
times.
Of the top manufacturers in the world, right?
I did.
So
I did.
A lot of pressure in some ways, too.
There was. Especially being in Japan, where you're just off balance about mm-hmm. the language and everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it.
So when you went to Japan, was that your initial introduction into meditation? Did that coincide with a cultural awareness or an awakening in you?
Oh, interesting question. Actually, in Japan, as a tourist, you can go to all these amazing temples.
Right.
And I went to many all over the place, Kyoto and Nara and uh-huh. in the south. But nobody ever told me what they were about. I was kind of left on my own to figure that out. And I realized at one point that I wasn't going to get the spiritual guidance I needed in Japan, but I was pretty sure I would be able to find it in New York City, which I did.
Did you feel inspired? I mean, I'm just curious if you didn't have a meditation practice prior to going to Japan.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so you found inspiration in your visits to Japan.
I was very inspired by the mm-hmm. sculptures and the temples and the monks walking around in their robes. It's fascinating and intoxicating in a certain way.
So you got back to New York. How did you then start, I guess, educating yourself about what sort of choices there were?
Well, I just did a Google search. And it said Village Zendo, 588 Broadway. That was right around the corner from where I lived. I mean, like, really, like, two blocks away.
You were on Crosby Street.
Right? I was on Crosby Street.
Yeah, right.
So I just was like, this sounds good. And I went over there, and that was it.
And you ended up actually being the director there.
I ended up being the administrative director.
For 2 years?
For 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did that change your life?
In so many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, meditation is an incredible practice that anyone can do. And it makes you look at the very fundamental nature of your life, even if you aren't a particularly philosophical person. Mm-hmm. It just happens during meditation.
So M.C. Richards wrote a book called Centering. Mm. She was a ceramic artist. But it parallels to me what I think I might know about a meditation practice, and that is it's a very much a centering process where you become centered within yourself. Am I on target here?
I think that's one thing that can happen,
okay.
but not necessarily
okay.
what will happen.
Let's so what happened way. To you?
Well, I think for me, it answered just questions that I had had before about what is the spiritual side of myself?
Mm.
What am I doing? What kind of purpose is there? Maybe even a purpose in being an artist. There were lots of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And in meditation, I could really... start to see a little more clearly.
Mm.
Just having the time of mind to ponder some of these things internally without other people's opinions.
So you have two children.
Yes, I do.
And how old are they?
They are 31 years old, twins.
Yeah, twins, that's
yes.
right. So they must have experienced you while you were developing your meditation practice, right?
Yes, they did.
And do they have their own practice? Were they inspired by that?
No, not exactly. I think they were inspired because I was a calmer person or something. But it kind of happened when they were leaving. They were on their way out
uh-huh.
When I started uh-huh. my formal meditation practice. They're totally supportive of what I'm doing, mm-hmm. and they love that I'm there.
Mm-hmm. So did either of your children, separately or together, come to you and say, "Dad, what does life mean? Why are we here?" Did you have that conversation with them, or have you had several conversations?
You know, those two are not really that type.
Ah.
They're very much doers.
Uh-huh. So they're makers, they're doers, they make things happen.
They make things happen for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think those are concerns that they seem to have explored, at least with me.
Do you think that changes as someone gets older?
I think so.
Yeah. I have a feeling now that I'm an old guy.
Me too.
And I'm asking all those questions now. The closer you are to your own mortality, the questions come up more frequently, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
But that's natural.
Yeah. So you and I ended up on a train together from New York City
yes.
home to Hudson. And
yes.
we had a great conversation. I talked about it for days with Margaret. One of the things that came up, and I've mentioned this once since then with you, was we were talking about death.
Yes.
And you gave this wonderful sort of overview about death. Do you want to share it with us?
I guess I could, but this is just my opinion.
It's just your opinion. Go.
All right. This idea is that when you die, you get to go wherever you want. Your personality, your life experiences guide you to that place. And the reason I came up with this was because my grandmother was a very devout Catholic, and she believed thoroughly that she was going to go and see the pearly gates
mm-hmm.
and meet her deceased relatives.
St.
Peter was going to let her in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, why deny her? Why would that not be a reality? Why not? What would be the purpose of
sure.
something else when that's what was perfect for her? And then I thought, well, why doesn't that extend out everywhere to everyone?
It's such a great... That comment so impressed me. I thought about it. I'm still thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
It's the idea, why not have a choice in the afterlife? You know, I mean, why not?
It is. Maybe it is. And if you'd like to be reincarnated, why not?
Why not? Okay, let's pause on that for one moment and ask why not about community radio. Rodney, what do you think is important about having a community radio station?
You know what? I've written a poem.
You have?
Yes.
Ah, I've written a poem. All right, let's hear it.
I've written a poem about community radio, and it's actually a fundraising poem.
Oh,
are you ready?
This is spectacular. Okay.
Okay.
Lynn is going to be so happy, I think. Okay, go.
This is a fundraising poem, and it's about radio. It's called Radio Waves. The radio is in your head. The radio is your head. Waves pass right through you. A cow stands in the mud near the tower. You are the cow. How do you expect to hear the waves? How do you expect to read the waves? How do you expect to make the waves? How do you expect to enter the waves? You must pay. You must pay to ride. You must pay with your monies. Your monies are your tickets to ride. Your monies are creativity. The waves are creativity. The waves are music. The waves are lies and truth and tears and laughs. Pay and receive. You are the tower. The cow stands in the mud.
Oh, that is the best ever. That's so wonderful. Yay! Let's give him a round of applause. Well, and actually, and that's something I didn't know about you when I first met you, because
yes.
of the monthly poetry reading series we have. Rodney has read some of his original poems at 394.
Yes.
And you're an amazing poet. And also your meditation practices obviously informed this aspect of you as well.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on again.
It was great to be here.
And thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it. And we'll look forward to seeing you at the Rodney Shop. What are the hours?
The hours are 11 to 6 Friday and Saturday, and 11 to 4 on Sunday.
All right.